The House Committee on Revenue for May 26, 2015 will come to order. Thank you all for sticking around for us. As we go, and I think the one bill that I am fairly certain is ready to work today is House Bill 2643. So we'll open the work session on that bill. Kyle?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2643, it's to refresh everybody's memories, it's relating to the enterprise zones, and we do have a A2 amendment that's up there at OLS. And the A2 would remove the provisions lowering the minimum cost requirements for qualified property used in e-commerce outside of an e-commerce zone. So just as a reminder, there's a minimum cost requirement for property. Right now, it's $50,000 for real property and personal property with two exceptions. And the exceptions are for personal property, instead of being a $50,000 minimum cost requirement to receive the exemption, it'd be $1,000. And that's for personal property used exclusively in the production of tangible goods, and then personal property used in e-commerce if it's used in an e-commerce zone. So that designation was in the A and Gross version, and the Dash 2 amendment would remove that and keep the status quo more or less. So really, the bill is pertaining to removing the limit on the number of enterprise zones and making it more of a local designation rather than with Business Oregon. We do have the paperwork for the A2, the fiscal is minimal, and the revenue impact. At this point, there's no direct revenue impact any longer since the changes for the e-commerce zone are removed. And this is because it would all be indirect impact. So it would be up to the locals, local governing authorities, if they expand the numbers of zone or something on those. But the overall conditions of enterprise zones still exist. So those haven't changed. It's just we could have more zones qualifying in the future, but it would be dependent on what the local governments do. So it's no direct impact to the state.
Okay. Any questions about this proposal at this stage? Let me ask one. There have been a couple of bills that we've had lately that have allowed local jurisdiction to add additional requirements in order to accomplish certain purposes. I'm thinking primarily about low-cost housing. That's already built into enterprise zones, isn't it, that they can add additional requirements to the ones that are specified in statute?
Yes, Mr. Chair, what we've seen is it would be the state, so the ones that are in the statute starting place, and if you're adding the additional requirements, they would have to be within those bounds. So it could be additional, but not, you couldn't remove.
Right.
What's in statute, yes.
Right, okay. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash A2 amendments to House Bill 2643.
Representative Benz moves the A2 amendments to House Bill 2643. Is there any discussion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2643 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Benz moves House Bill 2643 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Whitsitt?
I'll be a no on this. I still don't care for the elimination of the numeric limit on the numbers of enterprise zones.
All right. Anybody else? Representative Leininger?
Thank you. I share that concern, and while I may support it on the floor for right now, I'm going to be a no.
Okay. Do I have enough votes to get it out of committee? Okay. All right. We better call the roll.
Representative Davis?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
No.
Representative Reed?
Is excused. Excused.
Representative Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Benz?
Aye.
Chair Barnhart?
Aye. Oh, we just made it. With that, the bill goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I think Representative Lively was on this bill, if I remember correctly. We'll ask him to carry it. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2643. Okay, let's start down the list. 3199 has amendments. But I think we've already decided we're going to work that one tomorrow. Is that right, Paul? We'll work 3199 tomorrow. On House Bill 3125, that one also is carried over until tomorrow. There are some amendments, but it needs some additional work. On House Bill 2099, I want to open the work session on that. We don't have the paperwork, but for the purpose of discussing two additional amendments that we have, I think one of them, there are two of them. I'm not sure about that. So we'll open the work session on House Bill 2099 for the purpose of a conversation about amendments.
Mr. Chair, you have two amendments to House Bill 2099. The dash 8 came to us from Representative Davis, and the dash 9 was a committee amendment based largely on the dash 7, which you heard last week.
Okay.
There is a minimal fiscal for each of these, but we are still in process working on the revenue side of the revenue impact. The dash 8s, which you should be able to find in OLIS, go through and define tax haven, the jurisdiction that is a tax haven. It uses the same language you saw in the dash 6s and in the dash 9s that make up the definition. Laws and practices prevent effective exchange of information. The tax regime lacks transparency. Facilitates the establishment of foreign-owned entities without the need for local substantive presence. Those kinds of criteria that you see also as a basis of the dash 9. Mm-hmm. The differences come in as you go through on page 2 of the amendment. There is those jurisdictions that meet the tax haven definition, they're to be added back to income, but then there's exceptions to this. The income should be effectively connected or treated as effectively connected under provisions of the Internal Revenue Code. That's a provision that's not in the other amendment. And then there's a series of criteria where there's no requirement to add income back, and that is if the corporation's property, payroll, sales factor within U.S. is less than 20%, the tax haven is subject to provisions of a federal income tax treaty. The income results from transactions between unitary members of a group without the principal purpose to avoid taxes. So those would be significant changes relative to the dash 6 and the dash 9. It would become effective in 2016. The dash 9 is the dash, my dash is mixed up, the dash 6 with an additional provision. The other thing I should say about the dash 8, it eliminates a reference to individual jurisdictions.
Right.
And that's the major change, and that you can see on page 3 of the dash 8. The dash 9 retains the basic structure you have now in current law, lists the jurisdictions, makes the changes that were recommended in the Department of Revenue report. The one substantive change is on page 2, section 2, sub 3, says that if the Department of Revenue deems the jurisdictions that is not listed in Section 1B meets the requirements provided in ORS for inclusion on the list, they may be required by the Department to add back income to federal taxable income. And then it goes on to say if they are required to by the Department's decision, then the same subtraction or elimination, as we call it, would apply if those transactions did not originate from the U.S.
Great. Well, colleagues, the purpose of opening this was basically to introduce these amendments and to let you to give you a chance to look at them and for the public to get a chance to look at them. So we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2099. I think you can go ahead. Colleagues, we're going to carry over 2099 till tomorrow. Let's see, 2643 is out. We've already carried over 3125. We're going to carry over till tomorrow House Bill 2077. We're going to carry over till tomorrow, 3246. There, and my understanding is there's an additional amendment on that one, but we're not ready to discuss it yet. But so is it posted, Paul?
That yes, amendment? The amendment is
the amendment's posted, so go ahead and have a look at it.
You have the fiscal, the 2075 now.
The 2075 is ready to work. So we'll open the work session on House Bill 2075. Who's on that one? Mazin. And if you'll recall, colleagues, the point of the work session today is to work an amendment, which I understand is generally agreed to, and move the bill to the Ways and Means Committee for work on the distribution of the funds. Mazin, do you want to tell us about this amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 2075 reaches you with a dash five amendments that you would have on all this. The bill in general still raises the rate on fuels. However, the dash five amendment makes that increase at 2 cents, mm-hmm. and that these 2 cents are effective for the three different types of fuels. Those are jet fuel, avgas, and also mogas, effective January 1st, 2016, and sunsets on January 1st, 2022, which is the last just one day. The end of 2021, so that's a six-year increase. The just to quickly go through the amendment with you, so you would know how the layout of this package would be. Your first section it has in the second page the increase to 11 cents on the avgas and to 3 cents on jet fuel. That would be the main increase. Section two catches what's so-called the mogas, and mogas means every gas that is used otherwise but could be used for the purpose of either jet fuel or aviation fuel. So that is caught in that direction. And then section three makes that time frame of the implementation between January 1st, 2016 and before January 1st, 2022 for both the sections, which is the both types of definitions of the fuel section. That's the one and two here. Then section four basically brings back the current tax rate and brings it down from 11 to 9. This is the double negation or the double amendment mm-hmm. type of style of what we do in the statutes. So it brings it back to be effective, and that effective date for that is in Section 6, where you would bring back that that price to January 1st, 2022. Same thing in 1 and 2 for both types of fuel. And then in Section 7, you have the general idea of the dedication of the increases. So the increase that is on the basis of above 1 cent is dedicated in this section. And you have in the B, and that is page 6, you have small b in brackets, where you start having the dedication. And that dedication starts primarily by having a type of application or distribution device, if you will, and that basically says an overarching distribution needs to go, or the allocation or for the application and distribution would be for projects with the 5% of the cost that would be contributed towards these projects. And then establishes a commission or a committee or a board for decision making on the different projects. That is the review committee made up from the Transportation Commission area commissioners, basically in the Transportation Commission selection, and then allows for those to be, with, as you see in line 19, 21, and 23, you have that criteria starting to be developed, that you would have the overarching still on the safety and economic development and so on. Then it goes into the dedication of what the different use is for. So it takes, first of all, 5% to the Department of Aviation to administer all the programs, and then all the new programs. And then takes 50% of the remainder and develops the criteria for that dedication as in line 4 all the way through line 24 in page 7. This is to assist in aviation administration of improvement programs, and then to make investment according to the Oregon Resilience Plan, that is in line 8, and then to make grants for essential aviation, not limited to sewer, water, and weather equipment. Then you have hangars and parking in number 2 and in 3, airport economic development benefiting signs and marketing. The priority distribution here also says that if a project is being supported more with the contribution, it will get a higher priority. Then the second dedication is a 25% that is going to assist in commercial air services to rural Oregon. And the third dedication is another 25% of the increases in the revenue going to state-owned airports for the purpose of line 28 to 30, safety, infrastructure, and so on. The last page of the amendment, when you start in, on line 1, which is 8A or subsection 8A, is reporting requirements for the Department of Aviation, where it puts a report according to the reports that are specified in statutes, how they are done. But this, as you would see in line 8, it has a comprehensive analysis of the implementation of this section. And then later on, it requires a report to the time of when the session is in session, the legislature is in session, and that's why you have a February 10th date. So it reports to committees, primarily on transportation, and then once more in the interim on September 30th. Finally, Section 8 puts all these different implementation dates together and puts it at 91 days after it's been signee-die. Mm-hmm. So that is how the amendment works. Also, in your OLIS, you would find a revenue impact statement, and the revenue impact statement puts together what the different increases to the different fuels you would have, and the total revenue on that, the total revenue for a fully implemented biennium is about $7.6 million. However, the 15-17 biennium being an 18 months only, since the implementation is January 1st, that is only 6 months of the fiscal year, that would be a $5.3 million in that. And the different dedications are included in the impact explanation here. Now, you also have on all this a fiscal light, which basically says for the fiscal office that the measure is going to Ways and Means, and accordingly they would look at it with a lot more detail and the expenditures and so on as it reaches Ways and Means. And of course, you have other documents of letters of support and so on and all this. And that's the measure that you have in front of you.
Thank you. Comments on the dash five? Representative Vance, did you?
No comments.
Representative Davis?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash five amendment to House Bill 2075.
Representative Davis moves the dash five amendment to House Bill 2075. Discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Representative Davis?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2075 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Davis moves House Bill 2075 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the request for a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, unless it's already got a referral, does it?
No.
It doesn't, so we add the request.
Yeah.
All right, that's the motion. Discussion? I would like to simply note that this is one of those bills where you start out with a need, with a really good public hearing. Everyone remembers all those pilots who came and said, please, please tax us. And then a long discussion with interested parties to get to a result that everybody can live with. And I want to commend the people who did that work to get us to the place where we can send a bill to Ways and Means that they can put out to the to both floors and in all likelihood get adopted, that will have a significant impact and value for rural Oregon. And so I think those who did the work, and you know who you are, wasn't me, are to be thanked. And with that, is there any objection to the motion? All right, seeing none, the motion carries. And the bill goes to the Committee on Ways and Means, and with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2075. So, colleagues, we have two of these bills out today. I have not mentioned, I think, yet that the biomass bill, 2449, is not ready to work today. We'll carry that one over to tomorrow as well. But you'll notice, for tomorrow, we have 3199. 3125, 2099, 2077, 3246, 2449, all House bills. And our list is getting shorter.
Huge.
So, and you have an extra hour that you hadn't planned on. And we'll see you tomorrow with that committee. Yes, yes, sir.
Did I hear that we're having a we're having floor in the afternoon tomorrow?
No, it's on Thursday.
Thursday, I'm sorry.
Yes, and thank you for the question. The plan, as I understand it, and it may change, is that we are sitting with a whole bunch of Senate bills on the floor. There's no problem with any of them that I know about, but we just simply haven't had time to work them on the floor. So the Speaker's plan is to hold a second session after lunch on Thursday. We're still discussing to whether or not this committee is going to meet interspersed with going back to the floor, mm-hmm. so you get a little exercise between here and there at 1 o'clock, or whether we're going to meet late at 3 o'clock. It is my understanding that the current plan is for there to be floor on Friday, again, to clean up Senate bills, get them out. The Speaker has warned us of the possibility of Saturday meetings to advance the agenda if we need to in June. I will tell those of you who are new that this is a common threat. Usually doesn't happen because usually we're able to get suspension of the rules to avoid Saturday floor. But who knows? Who knows whatever those things are coming. So, and that's my comment. That's not the Speaker's comment. Anything else? Did that answer your question?
Thank you very much.
It did. Thank you. With that, the committee is adjourned.